funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, bowing out. After much speculation, Senator Bob Menendez announces he will not seek re-election in the Democratic Senate primary.
I am hopeful that my exoneration will take place this summer and allow me to pursue my candidacy as an independent Democrat in the general election.
Plus, one-on-one with the state's attorney general after he and the DOJ file a historic antitrust lawsuit claiming Apple is a smartphone monopoly.
And Apple has essentially followed the Microsoft playbook in ways that violate our laws and hurt our consumers.
Also, the Newark FBI warning about senior scams.
The technology is changing so fast, and a lot of us old folks can't keep up with it.
And it's March Madness. The Peacock's dreams of another run are cut short.
To make it back here after what we did is amazing, and I'm just proud of this group, and I wouldn't rather do it with another group.
But hopes are still alive for the Lady Tigers of Princeton. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Friday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The Garden State's longtime senior U.S. Senator is bowing out of the Democratic primary, but he's keeping the door open to run as an independent in November. In a nearly 10-minute long video posted to social media last night, embattled Senator Bob Menendez said he's hopeful he'll be exonerated during his corruption trial that begins in May, allowing him to pursue the candidacy in time for the general election. Menendez is facing 18 federal counts, including charges of bribery and obstruction of justice, for taking cash and other items in exchange for doing political favors. Had he entered the Democratic primary, he would have faced a highly competitive race against First Lady Tammy Murphy and sitting Congressman Andy Kim. Instead, as senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports, Menendez risks becoming a spoiler for the party.
I will not file for the Democratic primary this June.
Incumbent Senator Bob Menendez, pushed by both a looming corruption trial and a pending primary, announced he'll skip the June 4th ballot. But Jersey's senior senator's keeping his political options open, even as he fights federal charges that he and wife Nadine accepted gold bars, wads of cash, and a luxury car in return for favoring foreign interests.
I am hopeful that my exoneration will take place this summer and allow me to pursue my candidacy as an independent Democrat in the general election.
I hate to be the killjoy, but I really think this is, Menendez is trying to stave off his political expiration for a few more months.
Political observers say Menendez's adamant refusal to just get out of the way and his potential to be a vote-sucking spoiler is giving his party an election migraine. This is the senator's second corruption trial. His first ended in a hung jury where he vowed political revenge.
The Democratic Party are going to have, are biting their nails a little bit at the thought of a vindictive Bob Menendez, hanging around the ghost of New Jersey corruption past, shadowing their every move.
Menendez faced almost certain elimination in the upcoming U.S. Senate primary. He's polling in single digits against Democrats First Lady Tammy Murphy, Progressive Patricia Campos Medina, and Congressman Andy Kim, who derided the senator's independent Democrat declaration as selfish.
He's just trying to soften the blow in terms of just what is the actual truth, which is he would be running against Democrats. And so, you know, he can use all the semantics that he wants to try to make himself feel better about this. But, what he is doing is would be counter to the Democratic Party that he's been a member of.
Frankly, he should be thinking about his legacy and what he wants New Jersey to be like in the future, and allowing the voters to make a choice based on the candidates that are campaigning, that have full teams out there, and who are putting their vision forward for New Jersey.
Murphy posted on X, Senator Menendez continues to place himself ahead of what's best for New Jerseyans and the Democratic Party as a whole. He shouldn't have the privilege of serving in the Senate in any capacity. It's all tasty campaign fodder for Jersey Republicans who haven't won a U.S. Senate seat here since 1972.
A good Republican campaign with a third party candidate who's siphoning votes from Democrats certainly makes it more interesting to follow. I think it's still an uphill climb, but it gives Republicans another advantage that they're going to need to pull off what would amount to a miracle to win a race like this.
So suddenly now you come to New Jersey. Here's a state that's supposed to be calm waters, calm blue waters. No one has to spend a dime. It's not even on the radar, and now it's on the radar.
That could force Democrats to spend more protecting the New Jersey seat and their party's razor-thin margin in the Senate. More than half his caucus there have asked Menendez to resign. Pennsylvania's John Fetterman reposted Menendez's video with this pot shot, dibs on your parking space.
What I think Fetterman did was he actually refocused us on the news here, which is not just that that he's threatening to play the spoiler, but also that the incumbent U.S. senator is now leaving, is now saying he's not running for re-election.
Menendez's corruption trial is slated to begin May 6th. He's got until June 4th to file as an independent. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
In a sweeping federal lawsuit on Thursday, the Department of Justice and 16 states, including New Jersey, accused Apple of creating a monopoly in the smartphone industry, alleging the tech giant tightened its grip on the market by violating antitrust laws, not by staying ahead of the competition. The suit cites specifics like purposely blocking third-party mobile software from its devices so you can't FaceTime or use an Apple Watch with an Android, which keeps customers from switching to other providers while paying higher prices. The lawsuit filed in Newark is considered the government's most significant challenge to Apple's reach, and New Jersey Attorney General Matt Platkin was tapped to lead the case on behalf of the states. He joins me now. Attorney General Matt Platkin, thanks so much for your time. You know as well as I do that the courts have sided largely with Apple in previous cases. What makes this lawsuit different?
Well, I think as Attorney General Garland said yesterday, this is one of the largest cases ever filed by the Department of Justice and by state's attorneys general. And if you look at the complaint, you can see the conduct that Apple has engaged in has excluded other businesses and in ways that violate our laws, and it has stifled innovation. And what that has resulted in is consumers paying more for an inferior product.
Give us an example, if you can.
Sure. Well, I mean, Apple has limited third-party apps. They don't allow third-party app stores on their platform. They take extraordinary fees from app developers and from banks. They limit the wallets you can use on their platform. Tap to Pay is only for Apple Wallet, which is something that's not true on other platforms. You can't use cloud-based apps, which allow you to do a lot of different things without using up the hardware that you have. So you don't need the super expensive phone, which Apple wants you to buy. All of this is laid out in the complaint, but the upshot here is their practices over the past two decades have resulted in consumers paying substantially more for their products than they otherwise would have to. And if you think about that in 2007, if you take the price of an iPhone in 2007 and adjust it for inflation, it would cost $450 today, when an iPhone now costs over $1,500.
This is a private business, though, yes. I mean, hasn't the Supreme Court said in the past that private businesses are allowed to deal with other companies as they see fit and set the terms that they want to do business with them? So does that not include Apple and how it decides to work with other app developers, software, hardware developers?
Well, they can't operate in a way that excludes businesses that violates our antitrust laws. And I think the clearest example that Apple knows well is Microsoft in the 90s, when they weren't allowing iTunes and other third-party developed platforms on the Windows platform. And when the Department of Justice and state's attorneys general across the country filed suit and ultimately won that case, where Apple was a witness, Apple was able to develop the iTunes store for the Windows platform. iTunes led to the iPod, which obviously was a huge success, and then the iPhone. And now fast forward a couple decades later, and Apple has essentially followed the Microsoft playbook in ways that violate our laws and hurt our consumers.
I think the way you put it yesterday was that Apple is using rules made by Apple for Apple. What does the lawsuit seek aside from damages? What are you looking to have Apple do in just the structure of its market?
Well, the exact steps that Apple will have to take will play out as we litigate this case. But I think there are a number of things Apple could do and has shown in other markets that they can do, but has chosen not to do, that would give consumers more choice. Things like allowing third-party app stores on their platform, allowing what's called super apps, where you can do multiple things within one application, like send messages and purchase products. They restrict those types of apps now on the platform. So there's a lot of things they could do. And ultimately, I think it would allow Apple to innovate the same way when Microsoft had to allow Apple onto its platform. We saw the development of Apple and a number of other companies that grew into large American leading enterprises. Apple is stifling that type of innovation right now.
Mr. Attorney General, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
There's been an alarming rise in fraud scams across the U.S., and according to the FBI, Americans over the age of 60 are increasingly the victims. Federal investigators have new data showing fraud committed online and over the phone is adding up to nearly $1 billion in losses each year. You've likely been on the other end of one of those calls. The report also finds New Jersey ranked fifth in the nation in overall losses. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas visited a senior center in South Jersey where members of the FBI warned the community how to be on the lookout.
How many times has somebody thought to themselves, man, the IRS is fast? Nobody.
A group of special agents from the FBI and IRS spoke to a room full of seniors in Pemberton today about fraud schemes that are growing more sophisticated by the year, targeting seniors who simply can't keep up with the trickery and changing technology.
What they try and do is take advantage of time and opportunity. How fast can I get you to give me what it is that I need so I can get off this phone with you before you realize what the hell just happened? The IRS will never ask you for credit card or debit card information over the phone, ever, period.
They explained how seniors are especially vulnerable because fraudsters know they have time on their hands to take phone calls, are more likely to be polite, even if it feels wrong, and they're more likely to have wealth and assets that can be exploited.
You've won the European lottery. Congratulations. You just have to pay European taxes first. Oh, and by the way, the European law prevents us from taking your winnings and paying your taxes. So what are they looking for? They're looking for that advance fee. There's multiple iterations of this. That's the classic example.
Rich gave many examples of the telephone and email scams that ask for money up front, often playing on people's emotions like excitement or fear, or worse, romantic schemes that can last years where fraudsters continually find themselves in need of financial support. What's worse, AI is making it possible to do this even when they don't speak the same language.
Now what you can do with AI is speak in the native language of the fraudster, and it can actually translate into perfect English. And you can even do a voiceover where it will be, you can get on the phone and it will have someone with a perfect American English accent effectuating the fraud over the phone.
One attendee, Bobby Morris, just dealt with this when a supposed woman calling the wrong number launched a phone relationship that ended with death threats when Morris asked to FaceTime.
The technology is changing so fast, and a lot of us old folks can't keep up with it.
But if the phone calls are hard to detect, the emails can be even trickier, says Stephen Rich.
I got an email from Netflix.com, okay? This is screenshots from my personal iPhone. Said, I'm suspended due to payment error. And I was like, huh, that looks pretty professional, right? It took me a minute to figure out that, yeah, this is an absolute fraud.
Rich gave pointers like hovering your mouse over the sender's name and email to see the dropdown that indicates where the email is actually coming from. Abba Ligori says one of her closest friends gave away her life savings in a phone scheme, and she herself almost fell victim to a timeshare scheme that offered to pay her exorbitant fees. But she called her son first, one of the lessons of today.
It's important to call your son or your daughter or somebody you trust, because they can look at it with a fresh outlook. And therefore, you will not fall victim to the scam.
It's a shame that it's come to that in this world, but you have to really be aware. And so many seniors aren't real computer savvy. So this is a good education for a lot of them.
But it's not just seniors who are vulnerable, and sometimes calls can come in from legitimate numbers. So the biggest takeaway for all of us, be aware of scams that create a false sense of urgency and never make a payment in a non-traditional way. In Pemberton, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, making LGBTQ plus owned businesses more visible in the state. Republican lawmaker Don Guardian, one of the few openly gay members of the legislature, is spearheading a bill to permanently create a state certification process for LGBTQ plus business owners, giving them the potential to win funding, contracts, and other programs offered by state agencies. Despite getting widespread support, there were, though, some unlikely critics of the bill. That didn't deter Assemblyman Don Guardian, though, who says this legislation is deeply personal. He joins me now to explain why. Assemblyman, why was this bill so important to you? There is already a state certification process that Governor Murphy made possible under an executive order. So why was this important for you to get through the legislature?
So all of us in the LGBTQIA community are grateful for the governor for putting that legislation through, but I think we want to codify it. We want to make sure that it's going to stay when the governor leaves and make sure that the next governor does not change.
What about it for you, though, personally, made this a charge you needed to take up?
So I think we've been working very hard for the last 40, 50 years in New Jersey, trying to have an equal playing field. So, you know, we've certainly addressed this with minority, with women, with veterans, and it seemed to be logical to bring in the LGBTQIA plus community to be in the same category.
There was some criticism from one of your colleagues, Assemblyman Brian Bergen, who said, hey, listen, I'm all for making sure that opportunities are there, but this bill is largely symbolic and doesn't, in fact, advance these opportunities. What do you make of that, and is there any merit to it?
Well, certainly every individual that was in the assembly is the same as me. We're representing 200,000 people. And everyone has a right to express their opinion. In this particular case, I think it's clear as we look back just in my lifetime that it was in a playing field, that we weren't being treated equally, that we were afraid to go out and be seen. And we're not there anymore. We just want to make sure that as we continue, that we're recognized and that we make sure that there's no discriminatory action taken against us. I don't think it was symbolic. I think it was a good program. And, you know, once it's in place, in a few years, you're going to be able to see how many businesses they are that are owned by LGBTQIA plus community. You'll be see how much taxes they pay. You'll be able to see how many employees they bring in. So I think it's a good measure. It's long overdue, and we're very grateful. And I certainly am that, you know, of the 80 members in the assembly, only 8 voted against it.
What does it give those businesses, though, Assemblyman, that they can't already access? I know you said creates an even playing field, but are there certain contracts or state grants and funding that they can apply for that wasn't already there at their disposal?
No, this simply gives the ability for the state long term to be able to monitor and assure that if you're saying that you are an LGBTQIA owned businesses, that we're able to certify that. Very similar to what we do for other categories.
Has the governor indicated he'll sign it?
I don't know. I passed by the governor yesterday with a smile in the wind as we sent the SS New Jersey into dry dock, but I've not spoken on him. I know he has been very supportive of our family in the past, certainly invites us as a family during Pride Month up to his home. So I am pretty sure that the governor's going to sign it, since it was his legislation that created it in the first place.
So it awaits the governor's signature. Assemblyman Don Guardian, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Turning to Wall Street, stocks fell today, but the major averages still had a winning week. Here's how the markets closed on this Friday.
Support for the Business Report provided by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its Renew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Beat with Raven Santana this weekend. She takes an early look at the economic impact of the 2026 World Cup. Raven talks to host committee members and business leaders about what the next 2 years of preparation look like and how the state stands to benefit. Watch it Saturday at 5 p.m. and Sunday morning at 9:30 on NJPBS. And finally, it wasn't the Cinderella story we hoped for, but the March magic is not over. St. Peter's Peacock suffered a tough loss in last night's NCAA tournament at the hands of number 2-seeded Tennessee, ending their return to the big dance that just 2 years ago had the whole country Googling to learn who these underdogs from Jersey City were. Now, all eyes are on the Princeton Tigers women's team, who begin their NCAA journey this weekend. Ted Goldberg has the story.
As St. Peter's put its dancing shoes back on, hundreds of students, alumni, and fans gathered on campus.
Go Peacocks.
Go Peacocks.
Confident that their Peacocks could once again strut their way to another deep run in the NCAA tournament.
I feel like the Peacocks got this in the bag, man. I feel like we're gonna pull out the dub, get the win over Tennessee. Let's do this thing.
I think it's gonna go OT. And that St. Peter's going to win.
Let's go, Peacocks!
Executive chef Pat Style remembers the last time St. Peter's shocked the world, all of 2 years ago.
Last time we went for this run was in Philly. That's the last time I wore this coat. So hopefully it's good luck. We believe in our players. They're amazing, amazing kids.
Despite a tough start against Tennessee, these fans stayed loud throughout the game. Booing every Tennessee bucket and cheering for anything positive towards St. Peter's. Unfortunately for the Peacocks, there would be no magic this year as St. Peter's bows out of the big dance in its first game.
To make it back here after what we did is amazing, and I'm just proud of this group, and I wouldn't rather do it with another group.
A group that looks radically different from just 2 years ago. Every player except Latrell Reed is gone from the 2022 team, and head coach Shaheen Holloway left soon after to coach Seton Hall.
I wasn't expecting much out of today, but I'm glad we made it. You know, the guys fought hard and everything, but I'm glad I got to experience like a real March Madness run.
The Elite Eight was my freshman year, so that was a good experience, obviously coming from England, and then seeing that was a good experience of college. And we're just proud of them for getting this far, and obviously no one expected us to do well, but we're still proud of them for winning the MAC.
Even if the game didn't go their way, fans tell me they had a great time supporting their Peacocks.
This is great. I got them feeding tons of people here. Love feeding these kids. Got about 500-600 kids coming tonight.
Oh, a lot of fun. Like at the beginning, all of us were cheering. We have like matching headbands and pom-poms. We're all screaming and taking pictures. It's really fun.
The energy, I love the spirit of the school. And of course, like I'm here with my team. So it makes it even better because we have a lot of energy on our team. And we just love like the men's basketball team because like we're underdogs.
New Jersey's tournament hopes now lie with the Princeton women. The Tigers are no strangers to March Madness, winning a tournament game each of the last 2 years. Starting guard Madison St. Rose is from Old Bridge, and she can't wait to tip off tomorrow.
Just being able to get to experience that same kind of like energy and excitement that it did last year is truly amazing. I mean, I still feel the same way now. I'm extremely excited. I'm a bit nervous, but nerves are always good. Seeing all these upsets and seeing how these teams have like shocked the world and a lot of people didn't expect them to win, that's like really motivational because I feel like we can also do that as well.
St. Rose and Princeton take on West Virginia Saturday night in Iowa, with New Jersey basketball fans watching on from back home. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Ted Goldberg.
That's going to do it for us, but make sure to tune in to Reporters Roundtable this weekend. David Cruz looks at the marathon court hearing on Congressman Andy Kim's lawsuit to dismantle the party line. Then a panel of local reporters break down this week's political headlines. Watch it Saturday at 6 p.m. and Sunday morning at 10 on NJPBS. Then on Chatbox, David continues the conversation over the controversial party line system, talking to Democratic Party Chair Leroy Jones. That's Saturday night at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 10:30 on NJPBS. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back here on Monday.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.
Our future relies on more than clean energy. Our future relies on empowered communities, the health and safety of our families and neighbors, of our schools and streets. The PSEG Foundation is committed to sustainability, equity, and economic empowerment, investing in parks, helping towns go green, supporting civic centers, scholarships, and workforce development that strengthen our community.